Hello, and welcome back to the BenHeck.com podcast. I'm your host, Ben Heckendorn.
And I'm Jason Jones.
So we're trying to do these every month because we love our listeners, if there are any.
And we have nothing better to do, obviously.
Yeah. Well, it's a pretty nice day out.
Yeah, it is.
I see the guy next door has his boat out. Maybe he's selling it.
Yeah, I opened my sunroof on the way over here. It was nice.
Yeah. That's kind of my plan, you know, trying to take a long vacation. So when I got back, winter will be mostly over. Oh, who am I kidding? It'll probably snow in April.
Probably so.
Yeah.
It's Wisconsin.
Can't trust it. So anyway, we have two topics today. The topics are, well, the first topic is...
I always feel like I'm on a game show when you do this. You
what?
Know?
It's like, you know, like on Potables.
It's like when you're on Family Feud, you know, and they're like, oh, the category is, or... but anyway, carry on.
Oh, we played Bad Company Vietnam last night.
Sweet.
There's like one server left.
See, that was fun. I remember that because there was that cool... I can't remember the map. It's like all blown to shit kind of on the one side of it. And there's like kind of a mountain where you go through
it. Oh, yeah. Like it'd been napalmed.
Yeah. Like that map was really cool because there was like all different types of combat depending on which section of the map you were in. And
oh.
I always enjoyed that one.
Hey, you know what? That just gave me an idea. We could have a third topic.
Ooh.
We could complain about the state of the modern Battlefield franchise.
Good.
Okay. So now we have three topics.
See, I told you we'd stumble across another one.
Stumble upon. Okay, topic one is game prices. So I watch a lot of YouTube videos, probably too many, and I notice a consistent trend. People complain about the price of games, or more specifically, all the added stuff they expect you to buy or want you to buy. So we're going to talk about, we're not going to complain about that. We're going to talk about why it happens, because that's more constructive than just complaining about the fact that it does happen.
Yes. And justifying why it happens.
Yeah.
In our case.
I don't even know if you have to really justify it. I mean, it's just more of an explanation.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah.
Here's a hint.
We'll get
there. Involves math. Okay, so our topic...
Math and time.
Time, man.
Time math.
Time math? Is that what they did in Interstellar when it's like, we have to send Anne Hathaway into space?
Kind of. Michael Caine was doing time math, I guess.
I'm so sick of seeing Michael Caine in Christopher Nolan movies. I mean, he's cool and all, but I'm sick of seeing him.
I guess it's steady work. He just sits around, and then Nolan's like, hey, make another movie. All right, just let me know when I need to be there.
And then he goes back to his fabulous mansion that Jaws 4 built. What did he say about Jaws 4? I didn't see it. By all accounts, it's terrible. But I'll tell you, the mansion it built is marvelous.
Yep.
So our second topic is going to be regarding Deadpool. Neither of us have seen it, which makes us the last two people on Earth who haven't seen it.
But of course, we're going to talk about it anyway.
Well, right. You know, we've had this, you know, for about, I don't know, 20 years now, there's been a dearth of R-rated films. Everything's PG-13. And it turns out that people will go to an R-rated movie. It's almost like the majority of people on Earth are humans that are above the age of 17.
What?
So anyway, we'll talk about that and also, you know, whatever the knee-jerk reaction will be, which I'm sure there will be since it's Hollywood. Finally, our third topic that we just came up with on the fly, we're going to complain about the Battlefront Field series.
Yes.
Did you get Battlefront?
Yeah, we played it that one night.
Oh, that's right. Remember? Squad Awesome was briefly reunited.
Although I did see they posted something the other day where there's like new content coming. And it's
called
like...
Please play our game.
Yeah, and it's called like Outer Rim, and the picture of it, it looked really cool. And I'm like, I need to like not see things like this because...
I thought there was going to be like free content. Like,
yeah, this is just like the... You know, I think this is going to be the first wave of, like, the season pass shit.
Oh, you bought the season pass?
No, hell no. But I saw the shot of this thing, and I was like, oh, god damn it. Cause it's got, like, basically, like, Jabba's palace in the background, and I'm like, oh,
is
god
there a Sarlacc pit you can fall into?
Well, that's the thing, you know, think about that. It's like you could, like, fight through Jabba's palace, and then, yeah, maybe you fall into a pit, and, I mean, they probably won't do anything that cool, but you never know. But I saw that, and I'm like, ah, damn it.
Well, and
don't pull me back in.
A lot of the complaints about Battlefront would tie directly into our first topic as well.
Yes.
So
let's hop to it.
Yes, let's get started with our first topic, video game prices. So there's a lot of young punks on the internet who are like 27 years old and say, we're old gamers. We've been here since the dawn of gaming with the N64.
Ooh.
Well, we're older than you, so shut up.
Those are our credentials.
Well, you know what? We don't even go back to the dawn of gaming.
No.
Like, even if we were alive in the... technically alive when this 2600 came out. It's not like we had a choice to buy it because we were babies.
I did play it when I was a kid, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was
but
the
first
console I
played,
too. But
yeah, I wasn't making financial decisions related to it, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was more so like Nintendo where I really got into gaming. But I played a lot of games on 8-bit computers back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, BC's Quest for Tires.
But we are old enough... You know, well, I don't know about you because you were like rich, but like to mow lawns and have to do crap to earn money. You did that too, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm
anyway.
Rich.
Living in the mansion.
My
castle.
Silver spoon that I've misplaced.
We should put a picture of your parents' castle mansion.
Oh, no. Then people will be like, yeah, that asshole was rich growing up.
You are a video game one percenter.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of that, did you ever replace your TV?
Nope.
Oh.
It still functions.
Because we remember that Pi movie night we were talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we were like, we were trying to figure out where to have it. And I was like, well, Jones has a pretty nice kitchen. See, I was planning things for you. You're welcome.
Oh, thank you.
But then I'm like.
I'd rather that because I don't like planning things.
So. Right. But then we're like, but his TV is old. So we're thinking we'll do it at Max's place because he's got a better kitchen than me. Well, everyone has a better kitchen than me. And he just got a new TV as well.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
So that'll be the key. I can keep people from coming to my place for as long as possible, as long as I keep my old TV.
So are you on the second bulb of that thing?
Yes.
I'm still on my first bulb.
It just crossed past 9 years.
Damn.
Now. That's pretty amazing for like a... you know, modern electronic device that gets used as much as that thing does, which is kind of sad that that's amazing.
Yeah, I'm surprised you haven't bought a new one yet. I did. I couldn't resist.
I don't know. I've just been becoming more of a tight wad as I get older.
Yeah. And well, like, I don't have a fancy Cadillac like you, so I'm like, I'm going to blow money on a 4K television.
And trips to New Zealand. And
yeah, that wasn't free. Right. So we're going to use 1990 as a baseline measurement for game prices. Because I know in 1990 I was old enough that I no longer was given things like a Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like I had a Game Boy. I had to like mow lawns or whatever to get it.
Yep.
So my point is I know or we know exactly what games cost at that time because we earned money to pay for them.
And we were alive at that time.
Yes. Unlike half of YouTube. It's not that you get old or feel old. There's just so many more people younger than you.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, believe it or not, in 1990, this is, you know, pretty much near the end of the Nintendo's lifespan. The average cost of a Nintendo cartridge was $50.
Yep.
And some were even more, you said?
Yeah, I remember, like, Tecmo Super Bowl was pretty late in the Nintendo's life,
91.
But that was $60.
Damn.
And then there was stuff like, I can't remember the name of the company, but they did like Romance of the Three Kingdoms and Nabunga's Ambition and like all these strategy games, and those were over $70. But they had all sorts of like extra shit in them, basically, so that they would actually function. Ben knows more the technical side of that. I just know there was shit in them. So.
Right, so... oh, well, I'll get into that then.
Yes.
So the Nintendo is based off a 6502 processor, which means it can address 64K of memory. The first 32K is reserved for, like, RAM and whatnot. The second 32K is reserved for the game. So the very first Nintendo games that had no mappers fit within 32K, such as Super Mario Brothers. In order to have larger games, which happened pretty quickly, like as early as like 86, they had to do bank switching, which would take like a 128K mask ROM and basically load it in chunks into the back half of memory. So you'd access it 32K at a time.
Yep, that makes sense.
So they made ever-increasingly complicated mappers. Like the that Romance of the Three Kingdoms, there are a few games that I believe were a megabyte.
Oh, wow.
Which would be 8 megabits. Yeah. The average was usually 128 to 256. Although when you got into like the 1990, if you had a game like Super Mario 3, that was... Well, what was it? 256 plus 128, which is like, what, 396?
384.
That sounds right. So you're talking like, you know, nowadays we don't usually say megabit. So that would be like what? Like a third of a meg? Anyway, you know, they kept putting more and more stuff in the cartridge, and that all costs money. They weren't stamping discs. They were adding custom mapper chips. The MMC5, which was in like, Castlevania 3, Star Tropics, and I believe that Romance of the Three Kingdoms or No Gumba Gumba's Ambition. that was actually had a math coprocessor. So, you know, there's a lot of cool stuff going on inside the cartridge.
And then they always had to put, like, batteries in the ones that actually saved your progress and stuff because you couldn't save anything.
That all cost money. So it made the games more expensive. Now, once you got past the cartridge era, games were the same price, $50, like for the PlayStation 1. However, the disc cost went from, I don't know, I'm going to guess $15 to basically zero.
Yeah.
And that's the big reason why PlayStation 1 handed Nintendo its lunch. It was just more profitable to develop on the PlayStation 1.
And it also absorbed some of what the additional cost could have been in the production, because they could eat that in the savings from not being cartridge-based.
So video games remained at the price point of $50 from 1990 until 2005 with the Xbox 360, which is where it finally went to $60. So you're talking 15 years of zero inflation on price, during which time the cost of developing games skyrocketed. Let's say in 1990 it took 10 people 6 months to make a game. And let's say you paid those people, I don't know, $100K a year, which means it was $50K per person for the man hours or woman hours. Oh, look at that. There's your average game price. About $500,000, which is a number you see quite a bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, that held pretty steady for a while up until PlayStation 1. It really started going up with, like, PlayStation 2.
Yeah.
Because you started having not just 10 people making a game, but maybe 100 people making a game. And the more people that make games, the more they have to get paid because there's competition, and the price goes up.
Well, the games keep getting more sophisticated. You know, like, at a certain point, they actually started, like, employing, like, composers for like the music and you know, getting custom speech in games, so they would
like Michael Giacchino,
there you go. Medal of Honor. But then you'd have like, you know, custom speech in games, you got to pay actors, you know, like all these things contribute to the costs going up.
And the more data you have on the disc, you have to make better textures, you have to make more textures, you have to create more mesh, more detail. You know, if you think about like a game in the 90s, you know, polygonal characters didn't even have fingers.
Yeah.
And now they're rendering polygons for fingernails.
Yeah.
And the more detail you have, the more time it takes to create that detail.
Yeah.
So the cost has gone up and up and up. So if we take an average game now, and we're just talking salaries, we're not even talking all the other overhead. Let's say you have 200 people. And they're all making $100,000.
Yep.
And it takes them 3 years to make a game. $60 million. I think that's what happened to BioShock Infinite.
Yeah, because that drug on a long time.
Yeah, I mean, let's do the math. It was, I think they had up to 220 people working on that game, times what, 5 years, probably at least.
Probably
right?
About that.
Okay, let's say let's be really conservative and say they only make $90,000, which they wouldn't, but that's almost $100 million just in salaries.
Yeah.
And then if you add on health insurance and Social Security and Medicare and all that, that's like another 25%.
Yep. Yeah, so I was just going to say that, yeah, like, that's not the full compensation there.
Yeah,
either, so,
yeah.
Because people always forget about all that stuff, but...
And that's just salaries.
Yes.
Not the keeping on the lights, having a building, running the AC, having all the computers,
all
having
the
license costs.
Yep.
Yeah, so you're talking about a ton of money. Now, obviously, you know, there's some extreme examples. Like what Grand Theft Auto V will probably be the highest budget game for quite a while.
Yeah.
Was that $250 million, which is insane?
Something like that, yeah. But they also know that, oh, this thing's going to come out and it's going to sell, like, you know, whatever, 10 million copies in like a month or whatever the hell it is. And
yeah, definitely the scale of the sales, the expanded market has helped.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at... The previous generation, like the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, Wii, that was really like the greatest generation of video gaming ever. And I don't know if we'll even get close to that again. Like, you had the Wii sell like, what, 110 million? Like, all three consoles sold really well.
Yeah.
I mean, a previous generation, like, let's say PlayStation 1, the PlayStation 1 sells like 100 million units, and the N64 is like 25, like way behind, maybe 30, right?
Yeah.
But now you're talking like... Yeah, before, there was always like a runaway winner.
Yeah, because the PS2 destroyed the Xbox and GameCube. And
yeah, the Xbox and GameCube might have been like 60 million total combined.
Yeah.
But in 2006, yeah, I mean, you're talking tons and tons and tons of systems were sold. And so that really helped. I mean, you know, the games, there was a lot larger base to sell them to. But the problem that happens there is... you have to spend that much on a game no matter what. That's no guarantee it's going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're also losing money a lot of the time.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, basically over time, games have gotten much, much closer to, like, movie productions in terms of, like, how they're made. You know, because it's like they have a lot of the same elements. You know, they've got, like, writers. They've got, you know, composers for music. They got effects people. You know, there's, like... All that sort of stuff.
And you've got
actors, you know.
And just like movies, as the budgets get higher, the risk gets higher, mm-hmm. which means they take less risks.
Yes.
That's why everything is a Call of Duty clone or every movie is a Avengers ripoff because mm-hmm. it's safe. And, you know, it's a result of the budget. But if you think about it this way, in 1990... you pay $50 for a game that cost, let's be generous, $1 million to create.
Yep.
In 2013, you paid $60 for a game that cost $250 million to make. Now think about it. Like, if you were buying a house, and one house costs $1 million to make, another house costs $10 million to make, could you buy the $10 million house for only 20% more than the $1 million house? I mean, I know it's kind of a different subject, but it's so bizarre if you think about it. And that doesn't even take into account inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Okay, we're at inflationcalculator.org.gov.moveonchange. Okay, we're going to go to the year 1990. Woo, right? We're going to type in $50 in 1990. How much is that today? $90. Okay. So that's a very interesting number, and
yes,
we'll talk about that in a little bit. Even if you go to $60 in 2006, when the Xbox came out, even that would be $70 today. Now, if you go to the grocery store, do they give you free inflation?
Nope.
In fact, okay, so here's what they do. If you buy a box of, like, Hamburger Helper, it gets smaller every year.
It. Yep.
The price doesn't change. It's usually around $2.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I was talking to Dale about that once because he loved to make it.
Yeah.
I'm like, Dale, is it just me or is it makes less every time? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah, I've noticed that lately. Like, I hadn't had any Hamburger Helper for probably like a couple of years. And then recently I just got a couple boxes and ate some. And it was like, yeah, I can almost eat, like, the whole thing myself in a sitting now.
Yeah, like, it used to be you'd have, like, leftovers every
Yeah, you'd
time.
Easily have, like, two meals worth, it used to be. Where now it's, like, pretty much, you know, one meal, and then if you want to cut yourself short, you can have, like, a tiny meal left over, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely noticed that.
Even in the last 10 years. But then you take something where you can't hide the inflation, like... 1 pound of hamburger or 1 gallon of milk. It, like the weight doesn't change. So then you, oh, wow, look at the price.
Yeah.
Or like lunch meat, deli meat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's gone up like $2 in the last 10 years, which is actually faster than the rate of inflation.
Yeah, and like cheese and stuff. Like, yeah, anything where like a weight is involved, where like you say, they can't hide it. Because that's just like, you know, bags of chips and stuff too. It's like, well, there's just more air in the bag.
Yeah, I remember, Munchos, because we both love Munchos. So for like 20 years, Munchos had this bag, and it was printed right in the silkscreen, only $2, right?
They didn't have that for the whole 20 years, but it was like for a few years. They started doing that.
So eventually they had to raise the price, and they changed it to $3.
Yep.
And then I guess it didn't sell as well. So what they did was they turned it back to $2, and they just had less in it.
Yep.
So the reason I bring that up is because when people complain about a game like Street Fighter V, and they're like, where's the content? It has less content than the same amount of content as Street Fighter did 25 years ago. Well, if you can't raise the price of your game, you have to do something else to make up for the inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And just like how a box of Hamburger Helper might have less stuff in it, a game's going to have less stuff in it.
Yep.
And now let's talk about season passes. This is my favorite part. So let's go back to that inflation thing. Okay, so $50 in 1990 would be the same as $90 today. Okay, so you've got your $60 video game today. How much is the average season pass?
$30.
What's 60 plus 30?
$90.
Ah!
Surprise!
Making sense yet? Wow, we're so smart. it's like instead of just bitching about something and not looking into why it happens, all we do is we pull up Windows calculator and we can figure out why it happened.
It's amazing.
It's amazing when you apply logic instead of emotion to an issue.
Well, it's amazing when you ask why
instead
of just like jumping to outrage right away. You know, it's like people got to get paid. It's just how it is. So,
really, people complain that games are too expensive. I'm going to get flack for this, but I think they're too cheap.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really have a problem with it. It's like, just be selective in what you buy.
What did you say Street Fighter II cost on the Super Nintendo? It was a big cartridge, right?
Yeah, I'm 99% certain that was $75 when I bought it new way back in 92.
So if you had a $75 game now, people would be blowing up YouTube. Okay, that's $126.
So that would have been like back when they had where you could buy the Neo Geo MVS or whatever the heck it was, and then they'd always have the cartridges for sale, and they were like well over $100.
Oh, I think they're more like $200, weren't they?
Yeah, I think so. I always remember because, you know, apparently I'm Richie Rich, but I always remember looking in the back of like Electronic Gaming Monthly, which was the magazine back in those days, and they'd have like these companies that sold these games and stuff, and they'd have prices for them listed out on there. And I always remember like drooling over the Neo Geo stuff. And I'm like, well, I'll never have that because the prices were like insane for each game. Cause it was an actual like arcade cartridge.
A lot of mask ROMs in there. I mean, just the amount of stuff in a Neo Geo cartridge is probably like 5 or 6 times what would be in a standard game cartridge. I mean, it probably, and then the lower volume of sales, it probably did need to cost that much.
Yeah.
So I guess our point is, as far as inflation is concerned, games are actually a pretty good value. And if you do feel like a game has less content, it's because of the reasons we just explained.
Well, and to me, like the way to look at it is, it's like, look at it like you're getting a bargain because you are. You know, so you buy this game for $60, instead of them like putting all the content in it and then forcing you to pay $90, basically you can get it for $60, and then if you're like, yes, I really liked that, I want a bit more, then you can choose to pay that additional $30.
Yeah.
Instead of having your arm twisted and having to do it right off the bat. I always like choice, so that's fine by me.
Yeah. How about cable companies? Everybody's like, I don't want to pay $100 a month for a bunch of channels I don't watch. I'd rather pay less money for less channels.
Yep, the same thing. It's the same principle.
Yeah. Now, granted, you have anomalies like Fallout 4 where there's just tons of stuff in it for $60. But, you know, again, if you're Bethesda, you're like, well, we know this game will sell 20 million copies at least. So you can take the risk of spending more money on the game because you know that you'll get your return. And also, I guess Bethesda's not that big of a studio. It's like maybe 100 people. It's actually kind of small.
Hmm. It's it's kind of impressive what they churn out being that small, because you figure they don't only do Fallout. You know, it's like they do the Elder Scrolls games. They've got the MMO that they're, you know, continuing to support. So there are exceptions to the 60-30, of course. There's things like Battlefield 4 and Battlefront that tack on $50.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would agree that Battlefront definitely felt thin.
Yes.
Hey, here's one. $250. That was the cost of the original Atari in 1977.
Oh, God.
$977 in today's money.
Wow.
Holy crap.
Luxury item back in those days.
Yeah. Granted, yes, economies of scale has changed for these games. I mean, hell, that was made in America back then, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Still, that's insane. I mean, you know, if you look at like a console, well, I guess we could go backwards. We could say, all right, let's say it's 2013, right? And you're paying $500 for your Xbox One, which is still a dumb name. Let's go back to 1988. Yeah, that's still pretty expensive.
What would it have been?
$253.
Okay.
I mean, no console would have been that much back then.
What year was that, 87 or?
88.
88.
The year that everyone got a Nintendo. They were like, what, $100, $110?
Yeah, I thought they were $150, weren't they?
Were they?
I guess it depended, because they had the different bundles and shit. Then there was the one that came with like the power pad thing and all that.
Because PlayStation 1 was the first console to break the seal on like a $300 console.
Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't count the Jaguar or the 3DO. Those don't count. I mean, like, real mass market.
Yeah. And the Genesis, I remember when I got the Genesis, that was like $190?
Yeah, just under $200.
It was, yeah, because we bought it, ordered it from JCPenney, of all places. Out of the catalog.
Oh, JCPenney.
And that was probably 89 or 90 when I got that.
So you have a $300 PlayStation 1 in 1995 would be $466 today. So the Xbox One, granted, I think, it came out at too high of a price because it was $500, right?
Yeah, because they put the Kinect in with it. And then once they yanked that.
But that $500 Xbox One, inflation-wise, was closer to the cost of a game console 20 years ago than the PlayStation 4 was. The PlayStation 4 is $66 bargain.
Yeah, well, and that's like they always say, is essentially they sell those things at a loss pretty much, or maybe they break even, but it's all about all the other stuff, all the games.
Well, ultimately it's the cost of the consumer that matters. That's what we're talking about here.
Yep.
So now ask yourself, well, I don't think any of us were old enough to be paying rent in 1990.
Nope.
But even think back 10 years. It's like, is your gasoline only 20% more expensive? Is your rent only 20% more expensive?
Actually, the gas might be right now, because the gas is actually probably lower than it was 10 years ago, strangely enough.
Let's put that in. Inflation. So when we were in high school, what was about $1.30 probably for a gallon of gas?
Yeah. I always laugh when I watch Die Hard. Because there's that spot where Twinkie guy, Powell, is at the gas station.
He has like 88 cents.
And he walks out there and you see the prices at the gas station. Yeah, it was like 88 cents.
Well, gas was under a dollar right up until the first Iraq war. That's when it actually went over a dollar. But look at that. $1.30. That's $2.08 today. So that's actually, gas is cheaper. Gas has gone under the rate of inflation.
Yep. Yeah, because it's what, like, $1.60 or so right now?
Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah.
Basically, the price of video games has gone against the rate of inflation. It's actually, historically, not that bad.
It's kind of like gas right now.
Yeah, it just shows that anything can happen, I guess. The gas thing is pretty bizarre. Because remember when we were making possums, one was like, what, $4 a gallon?
Yeah, it was.
What was that all about?
Ridiculous. But it's like, too, you think about things like back when you first got your first PC, you know, like, I mean, I guess this is going the other direction, but it's like, yeah, some things do go down in price.
PCs are usually about the same. Like, I've been making PCs for almost 20 years now, and like $1,200 is like probably about the average for a pretty decent PC.
Yeah, it just kind of stays
about
the same.
Yep.
And
like $200 of RAM, $200 will get you whatever the modern good amount of RAM is.
That would get you a shitload of RAM now.
Yeah, it's like really cheap now, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, CPUs have gone up a bit though. Like a good, you know, i7 is like what, $300?
I haven't built one in a while, so
I want to say back in the 90s it was more like 150. So that part has gone up a little bit, but yeah, you're right. Actually, I would say motherboards have gone up a little bit as well. Like, okay, a good motherboard now is around $250. So that's about, I don't know, $75 more than it used to be.
But it's like memory's cheap.
Yep.
Storage is cheap. You know, it's like, so they kind of help balance out.
Yeah.
Where like CPU and things have gone up a bit. Because I remember, yeah, like the first computer we bought, like PC or whatever, it was something stupid like $1,800 or whatever. Oh,
well, remember in the early 80s, a Mac or a IBM PC was like $3,500 in the 80s.
Yeah. Oh, you put your calculator away. Oh, well, that's fine.
Oh, inflation calculator?
Because it's like, holy
shit. I don't even
want
to know how much money that would be.
Yeah.
It'd probably be like, what, $8,000?
Probably.
Yeah.
At least.
Well, if you have 2.5% inflation every year on average, so that means every 10 years is a quarter. So every 40 years it doubles.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Because, yeah, they talk about stuff like that in that Steve Jobs movie, because they're like at the launch of the original Mac, and Kate Winslet's character's like, you know, like the thing's just too expensive. You know, it's going to be like $2,500, and, you know, Jobs is all like, oh, but it's this and that and blah blah blah, and she's like, it won't matter because people will buy it and then they'll find out they can't do anything with it. And then like when he goes to debut the next thing, like that was another problem with that, is it's like, well, yeah, it costs this much, but to be able to like do anything with it, you basically have to like buy all this other shit. And it became like a $10,000 computer, and that was like back in 88.
And then ironically in the early 90s, Apple ran ads talking about how much money it would take to upgrade your computer to 3.1 versus just buying a Mac. All right. So our next topic is R-rated movies.
Oh, yeah.
So Deadpool
just
is
in general.
Well,
it's probably
that has come out, and everyone has seen it but us.
Yeah, it's probably not just R-rated movies. It's probably like the types of movies that could have R-rated examples made, maybe.
Well, I think what happens is old people don't go to movies, so they don't make movies for old people. It's a self-feeding problem.
Yes.
Whereas teenagers go to movies, so they make movies for teenagers.
But then it's interesting, something like Deadpool comes out and it like obliterates like every record imaginable.
Yeah, didn't that opening weekend it outgrossed any X-Men movie? Or it had a better opening weekend?
Yeah, it was, because it made, I think for the 3 days, it made like 125, 130, and then for the 4 day, it was like 140 or something. But like the previous biggest R-rated opening ever was like Matrix Reloaded, and that was around like 90 million.
And that was a sequel.
Yeah. And so this made like 35 to 40 more than that. And it did it in February, which has traditionally been like the dead time of year for releasing movies. But Deadpool proved it's not dead.
You know, I can tell who's texting me by the how quickly they send successive. Oh, okay. So that was either Oric or Allison. It was Allison.
So,
there must be some sort of Apple app where you can just type a whole bunch of text and then it just turns it into like 5 text messages. Because then it'll be like, bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, that happens like on, well, that probably happens with like any of them. Because like my phone, I can sit there and type. And then if it exceeds like the SMS message length, it'll just create another one. And then it'll end up like, you know, shooting a whole bunch of text.
That seems like bad form.
Ah, fuck it. Sometimes you gotta do it.
Bad form, Captain Hook. I am Neverland.
It still beats talking to people on the phone, so.
Yeah.
But,
oh yeah, Deadpool.
But yeah, so it, like, destroyed, like, the February opening record. It destroyed the R-rated record, and it did it, yeah, like, at a time of year when people normally don't go to movies.
Yeah.
And it's amazing, like, we haven't seen it, and we see a decent number of movies.
Yeah.
But it's like, I've talked to so many people that have seen it. Like, it's really weird. It's like, basically, like, Force Awakens and then, like, this are easily, like, the most talked about movies by people like I work with that I can think of in ages.
Looking at the trailers, it seems like I would not enjoy the type of humor that is in it. It's kind of why I'm not interested in seeing it.
Ah. You never know. You don't really like comedies anyway.
That's so true, because I'm a psychopath or whatever I was called that one time for not liking comedies.
But it is interesting because, you know, like you said before, it's like, okay, how is Hollywood going to react? Because they always have a knee-jerk reaction.
They reacted pretty quick.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, Hollywood, they sit around, and I don't know what their deal is, but it's like when there's a movie that comes out that has a bunch of women in it and it makes money, and then they're like amazed by it, like Bridesmaids or Pitch Perfect comes out and makes a bunch of money, and they're just kind of like, huh, how did that happen? And it's like, because fucking more women than men go to movies, that's how it happened. It's like, it's not rocket science. And then it's just like this, it's like, oh, here's this R-rated movie, and it's maybe not necessarily just that it's R-rated, but maybe that it did it the way the story required it to be done.
Yeah,
but it's like, now the knee jerk is going to be, oh, now we have to make like everything R-rated.
Well, I mean, if we mentioned the women, so, you know, oh, what, oh, we forgot 50% of the population are women. With, like, our rating, it's like, you know, what would that be? Roughly 60% or more of the population is old enough to go in an R-rated movie.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? It's like, yeah, it's like surprise. Just completely ignoring statistics. But,
and those people have money also.
Right. The negative with that is that if you're a parent, if you're a parent and you go to a movie, it's probably taking your kids to, like, Pixar or something.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this thing now where nobody gets babysitters, I guess.
Seems that way.
That's like these human wastes who take their baby into an R-rated movie because they don't want to bother. The thing. Same thing with airplanes. It's like, why are there babies on airplanes? Because they're free.
Yeah.
Why are there babies in movie theater? Because it's free. And guess what? Free costs more than a babysitter. Hmm. Therefore, shitheads will take their babies to a movie theater. That's why it's enabled. I think, you know, like on planes, they have like lap children. Like, if you're traveling with a lap child,
God.
I don't think it should be free. I think there should be like a $10,000 surcharge.
$10,000?
Yep.
That's pretty extreme. I agree it shouldn't be free, but I don't know. $10,000 seems like it might be kind of spectrum.
Hear me out, hear me out. Let's say you wanted to ship a radioactive rock. Is UPS going to charge you more or less than a standard rock?
I don't know what their requirements are for shipping radioactive, you know,
radioactive
elements.
Rocks?
Yeah, debris.
Well, same thing. Like, a kid on an airplane is really annoying.
Yes.
And the parents might have tuned out their bullshit, but everyone else hasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, here's what I would do.
They should have to pay everybody else on the plane.
Well, yeah, you take that $10,000 and you divide it up and you give everyone else a discount.
Yep.
The actual way I would do it, you know, if I was the head of an airline company.
Yeah, what the fuck plane is this? Like $10,000 to bring your baby on it?
Hey, between like going to New
Concorde?
Zealand and then going immediately to Charleston, I was on like 11 or 12 flights last month or this month alone.
Jesus.
So I definitely was thinking about this stuff a lot.
Oh, I'm sure.
Anyway, here's how I do it. You'd put the lap children at the very back of the plane.
Yes.
Because they get to board first anyway, because, like, you know, people traveling with small children, blah, 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 they get to board first. So their seats are in the back, so they're not sitting there, like, looking at every bin. They just walk straight to the back.
Yep. Because
I assume they can count, right? Okay. So then after that, 50% of all airline travelers are old people, like 60 or older, which is why Loth was bullshit. So you put them in front of the people with lap children.
Because they can't hear as well?
Because they can't hear, and they think babies are cute.
Okay.
And they're also slow, right?
True.
So while it might take them longer to get on the plane, it'll also take them longer to get off the plane, but the people who are fast are in front of them, so they can get off faster.
Yep, there you go.
And then, so it's basically people traveling with little kids, old people, and then everyone else. And the airline knows your age. You have to type it in to get a ticket.
Okay.
All these algorithms like Amazon sorting things, why don't we sort people on airplanes?
Yeah.
Why do we randomly fill airplanes? Just do this. Like, okay, we have, you know, I don't know, 80 seats. Once the plane is full, because every effing flight is completely full these days, then sort it.
Yep.
That's how you would do it, like, if you were,
but
like,
you don't get to
manufacturing beans or something.
You don't get to pick your seat then.
Who cares?
I'm just saying.
Like, they should find whoever, like, whoever runs, like, Amazon's, I don't know, warehouse management.
Yeah.
They should hire that person to, like, redo airline travel.
Maybe Amazon should just take over airline travel.
I think it'd be funny if Amazon bought the Postal Service.
Yes.
That would be so funny.
That would be pretty awesome.
They put, I mean, basically, the Postal Service basically is Amazon.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you were saying they use them to, like, deliver shit on the weekends,
on
right?
Sundays,
yeah. Yeah, like Sunday even. Yeah. That's pretty wild.
So anyway, that's my plan for the airlines.
Sounds good. I don't know what it has to do with R-rated movies, but...
Oh, that reminds me. So, I saw this new thing. Oh, when I saw Bridge of Spies, actually, because it was one of the movies on the plane.
Nice.
And every seat had a screen in the back of it, but it actually made sense because you could watch, you know, plane-aged movies for free. So,
okay.
Like, Bridge of Spies was... You could just watch it for free. It didn't cost you anything.
Nice.
Right? But there was this cool thing. It was like a parallax barrier, like the Game Boy or the Nintendo 3DS has.
So the person next to you,
the person next to you, their screen looks blurry.
Yeah. So you could watch something that's,
yeah,
like skin or whatever.
Yeah,
or
you could watch
and...
like Showgirls or so. I don't know why you'd want to watch Showgirls. Oh, I finally watched Flashdance. I never... That was like,
well,
the
that's
last...
That's right, you texted me about
the
that.
Last cheesy movie from the 80s I'd never seen. So I'm like, I'm going to rent this, put it on my tablet, and watch it on a flight. So
I don't think
I
I've ever seen that. It's Isn't not... that the one where she's at the beginning dancing and then she pulls the chain and, like,
yep,
water just drops on her?
Yeah. And she's like a welder or something? But
yes, yeah.
I don't know how to weld, but I guarantee that her welding was not welding. She's like kind of, she's got a stick welder and she's kind of poking something with it, which is not what you do.
That's really not how it works.
Yeah, but I would say of all the cheesy 80s music-based movies, I would say it's probably the worst.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's saying something.
It's not very good. It's no, it really, plot or script wise, it's no better than Showgirls, which,
okay,
he also wrote.
Yeah.
So,
Esther House.
I don't know why it was embraced.
Was it? I guess it was popular, wasn't,
yeah,
it?
Yeah. And, you know, that then Joe Esther House, it became the hot writer, like $1 million scripts. He was the first guy to get like $1 million script.
Yeah, because then he did what? Basic Instinct.
Yep.
Right.
And
Sliver.
And Showgirls.
And Showgirls. And that's when he went away, I think, was after Showgirls. Didn't he write some memoir a few years ago?
Of a geisha?
Probably.
I don't know. It was like, why I wrote Flashdance.
I seem to remember there being some sort of controversy a couple of years ago with him.
Speaking of R-rated movies.
Some shit, but...
Don't you hate it in when they have PG-13 strip clubs in movies?
Yes. Yeah, it's like, the other day, it was just funny, like, there's this movie called Up the Creek that I remembered watching when I was a kid and all that, because my parents were cool, I guess, and they let me watch shit like this when I was a kid. It's, in some ways, it's kind of like the spiritual successor to Animal House from, like, the early 80s. It's got Tim Matheson in it and all that. But it's just, like, these bottom feeder college guys having to go, like, win this raft race. Like, it's the sort of shit that got made in the 80s for movies. But then there's just, like, scenes where, like, these people come pouring out of a Winnebago and there's, like, a woman, no top on at all. And I'm just like, God bless the 80s. Like, that was just a common occurrence back then. It's like topless women. It's like, oh, big deal.
I hear that if you go up to Apple River here in Wisconsin, that happens.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Have
fun
to check
fact.
That out. But it's like, yeah, now it's like, yeah, you have strip clubs and movies and stuff like that, and they're all, like, still clothed in some manner.
It's
and
like,
stuff.
Who would be
it's
going to these
stupid.
Strip clubs? It's like, I just, you watch some Michael Bay movie, it's like, Michael Bay is like a 48-year-old, unmarried, mega-rich Hollywood millionaire. I guarantee he goes to strip clubs.
Oh, yeah.
He knows what they are. But then we have this crap on screen, and I guess that kind of relates to R-rated movies, because I guess at least you could have a realistic strip club.
Yeah, yeah. But it's kind of one of those things, it's like, you know, what happened? Like, everything had to become politically correct, I guess, because it's like, if you look at the 80s, like...
You're talking about, like, why everything turned into PG-13?
Yeah, because it's just like, you know, in the 80s, it was common for that sort of stuff to be in movies or, you know, whatever.
Huh.
And then somewhere along the way, it changed.
Well, I mean, if you look at, Home Alone.
Would it be Home Video?
Home Alone was a huge family-friendly comedy. It made more than any of these other movies we were talking about. And it's like, oh, if parents can take their kids, blah blah blah, you know,
we can make more money.
Even like, Coming to America, that was rated R. I don't know why, but it was. Eddie Murphy?
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking of Trading Places. Yeah, yeah. Coming to America. Oh, there's the scene.
Most of those were.
There's a scene with some topless women in that, though.
In Coming to America?
Yeah, because isn't there the scene where, like...
I don't remember it.
Where he's in the tub. It's, like, showing his life before he comes to America. And then it's just him. But then at the end of it, you see these two women pop up. Aren't they, like, topless? And she goes...
I haven't seen that movie in, like, 25 years.
Because then she goes, "The royal penis is clean, Your Highness." And he has, like, this satisfied expression on his face. That movie's great.
So,
yeah, like, Trading Places
you're just
was...
saying that it's not enough random nudity in movies?
Yeah, it's just because it's, like... it, and it's not just like, oh, my God, I get to see a woman's tits or whatever. You know, it's like, that's just natural, whatever. But it's like you say, you watch a movie and it goes in a strip club. It takes you out of the movie when you're like, why the fuck do they have clothes on?
Yeah.
Because it's like, this isn't a real strip club, so it takes you out of the story.
Well, another thing,
watching,
I mean, if you have an R-rated movie and, you know, people get shot and there's blood flying everywhere and it's more realistic.
Yes.
You can actually depict, I mean, if that's your goal, you can depict violence, you know, in a horrific way. Like the latest Rambo movie, although I think that went too far. It was like,
oh,
disturbing.
God. Yeah, like meat flying off.
Yeah. I guess it's the thing, I mean... I don't even obviously, you know, I don't even think about the rating. Like, if I buy a video game, I don't know if it's rated M or teen. I don't care.
Yeah.
Same thing with movies. Like Flashdance, I would assume it was rated R. Yeah, it had to be. There was some pretty rough language in it. But you know, I bet like teenage girls watched that back in the 80s.
Probably.
Apparently, nobody cared.
Yeah. Well, and it's like I was like, you know, 9 or 10 years old, and I was watching Animal House and Up the Creek. You know?
Yeah.
And there's people swearing, there's skin in those movies, and it's like, you know what? Life went on.
I'm sure tons and tons of teenage boys watched Deadpool.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Chuck took his kid.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can. Under 17, under 18, not admitted without a parent. So you can take your kids to an R-rated movie if you want.
Oh,
so
yeah.
The only rating where you can is NC-17. That's when no one under that age is allowed.
But it's like... Yeah, I don't know. It's just unfortunate, I guess. I don't know.
Well, Wolverine, they're like, okay, the final solo Wolverine movie, they want to make rated R.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yes, for that story. Because those movies always kind of felt held back a little bit because they couldn't be R. But now they can because there was a successful R-rated comic book movie, I guess.
Yeah, it's like they're completely afraid to do something. That's Hollywood in general. They're completely afraid to do something until it makes them a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
They were afraid of television. They were afraid of DVD. They were afraid of online. They were afraid of R-rated movies. And it's almost like you go without R-rated movies, or, well, I should say mainstream R-rated movies.
Yes.
For so long, it's like a breath of fresh air. I think part of it with Deadpool is it seems to lampoon comic book movies.
Yes.
So I think people are kind of getting sick of them, and it's like not only is it rated R, but it's like a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
I thought that with, like, Game of Thrones. Like, everyone loves that show, and it's got tons of violence, tons of sex.
Mm-hmm.
But you get to watch it in the comfort of your own home. It's not like, ooh, I'm seeing all this skin in a theater. I kind of feel like a perv.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm watching it at home. Who cares? I think that's a big part of it.
That could be.
It's like, what gets you to go to the theater? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like Adam Sandler. Like, what was that? Ridiculous Six was allegedly, like, the most popular new release in Netflix history.
Yeah, further proof that just people will watch anything that's new.
So remember when we used to do the shitty movie nights like 10 years ago and we would have to go to the video store and didn't matter what the new release was.
Yes.
On like the first Friday or Saturday, every copy would be gone.
Yes, like fucking Love Guru. Gone.
Yep.
And it's just like
100 copies guaranteed. Gone.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's a new release. That's all people care about. That's why Redbox, was it Redbox that was called? That's why that thing killed video stores, because people did not care about all your old legacy movies. All they want to watch is the new crap.
Yep, the new
and
thing.
And Redbox can hold new crap.
Yep.
That's all that matters.
Yeah, my biggest worry, I guess, with the R-rated thing is that, you know, like, I hope they don't knee-jerk too far and be like, oh, now we're going to make... I mean, I don't think they're going to make, like, everything R-rated, but it's like, make stuff R-rated where it makes sense. Like the sort of movies where before you kind of pulled back a bit, now you don't necessarily have to pull back anymore. But it's like, don't go and make like the Avengers R-rated, which they wouldn't anyways. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's like,
but
do
if
it where
you're making
it suits the story.
Terminator Genesis.
Yes, like that could have been R.
So here's the thing that I think is so dumb about these PG-13 sequels to old R-rated movies.
And Die Hard.
And Die Hard. Or Wolverine. But Wolverine's a good example. I saw someone online that's like, well, if they make a R-rated Wolverine, it'll alienate Hugh Jackman's fans. It's like, again, can you do math? Unless you were under 2 years old when the first X-Men movie came out with Hugh Jackman, then you can see a R-rated Wolverine movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, are you... What is it, under 17 or over 17, or what is it exactly?
For R, it's 17. So as long as you're 17 or above.
The average person lives to be like, what, 80 years old? And they can all see R-rated movies unless they're under 17. So that, isn't that the vast majority of people?
You would think.
Can see R-rated movies? Well, or like Die Hard. It's like, if you are old enough to give a crap about Die Hard, you are old enough to see an R-rated movie. Or Terminator.
Yep. Because it's like nobody around nowadays has any connection to that shit, so they don't care.
Yes, and the people who do care are going to be like, I don't want to see this movie because it's rated PG-13.
Yep, I did not see either of the last two Die Hards in the theater because of that.
Oh, the last one was so bad. It was rated R.
I still haven't even
seen
it.
That's a perfect example.
Yeah,
they made it rated R, but it's just so atrocious, it didn't help. So the PG-13 Die Hard 4 is actually a much better film, just because... Oh, God, it's atrocious. It's one of the just worst, laziest movies I've ever seen.
Well, the last one is A Good Day to Die Hard.
Yeah, that's one
number
in
five.
Russia.
Yeah, I haven't seen that
everyone's
one.
Everyone's favorite block of wood, Jai Courtney. Do you need to destroy your franchise? Hire Jai Courtney.
He's like the new Sam Worthington. It's like, oh, here's this guy. We're going to stick him in movies for a bit.
I almost think he's worse than Sam Worthington. Sam Worthington at least had a little bit of earnesty to him.
Yeah.
You know, and Jai Courtney is just like a robot.
Kinda, yeah.
He should have been
he
the Terminator.
He should have been a Terminator. Yeah.
But seriously, I mean, let's think about the math. Like, let's say you're only 5 years old when Terminator 2 came out. So now you would be 29. Mm-hmm. You are old enough to see an R-rated movie.
Yes.
How far could we go with that? Let's say you were 5 years old when Terminator 3 came out. It would make you born in 1998. That would make you, what, 17? Almost.
Terminator 3 came out after, what was it,
2003, wasn't it?
Was it 2003? Yeah. Yeah, that's probably right. So yeah, you'd be like 18 years old.
You are old enough to see an R-rated movie.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the way to do it... Oh, here's an idea. What if movie theaters had like a daycare? Like, you could go to a movie and just throw your kid in some room and lock the door.
It'd be like church, because they do that in churches now.
It's a good idea.
Yeah.
They should
have done that instead of putting that fucking bar in the movie theater.
Or we just do both.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Then the parents can drink while their kids are in the daycare.
Yeah, get drunk and then
pick
up the kids. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Someone should take that idea. Feel free to steal it.
Yes, please. But yeah, so like a R-rated Wolverine, it's like that makes sense.
Yeah.
What other things could they make R-rated?
Well, I guess the question is, what are mainstream movies? Because all it applies to is mainstream high-budget movies.
Yeah.
What other mainstream movies should be R that aren't? Well, you know, maybe it's not just take a superhero movie and make it R, but make the kind of big-budget R-rated movies they used to make.
Yes.
Like, well... Again, there's no reason to make a Total Recall remake, but make some sort of, you know, high concept movie like that and have it be rated R.
Yeah. Well, and even too, like stuff like The Martian, that was rated R, right?
I don't think so.
It wasn't?
Because
doesn't he say fuck a bunch in it, or did they bleep it out or do it cleverly enough that they get around it? Because I know there's the spot where you know he says what the fuck, but it's like... You just see him from outside his compartment, so you don't actually hear him say it. So maybe they did get around
that. I guarantee that's PG-13.
Okay.
There's no reason for it to be R.
Well, it would have been the number of fucks would have been why.
If you look at something like Terminator 2, if you took out some of the language in Terminator 2, you could make that as a PG-13 movie.
Well, that's the thing, too. Like, if you, yeah, because people would talk about how the wishy-washiness of the PG-13 rating, because it's like things like the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah,
it's like
incredibly
they're pretty
violent,
but they still got away with being PG-13.
Because the orcs had black blood.
Black blood, yep. Yes, instead of red.
Well, like Spider-Man, the first one, got an R rating originally when near the end when Green Goblin is kicking the crap out of him and he punches him and like he flies, you know, and like he's spitting.
Yeah,
I guess they filmed that as blood.
Oh,
and
okay.
They actually had to paint it white, turn it into spit to get a PG-13.
See, that's what's stupid. I remember years ago there was some interview with like Darren Aronofsky where he was talking about like violence in movies and things, and like he was, not to try to get too far off topic, I guess, but it fits into the R-rated thing, but he was talking about how really doing that sort of stuff is detrimental. Because I think it was around the time when they were going to put Saving Private Ryan on, like, network television one night, and there was, like, all this hoopla because of the violence in it. And it's like, well, that really happened, and it also shows, like, the consequences of those sorts of actions.
But if James Bond goes around shooting hundreds of people bloodlessly,
yes,
it's actually more damaging because you don't see
the consequences,
effect of it.
Yeah. And that was his example, actually. Yeah, it was James Bond movies. It was that he's like,
it's like when you shoot people, they don't immediately die.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's ever hunted could tell you that. It's actually kind of disturbing.
Yeah. So I just hope that, yeah, they do more of them. You know, it's like I don't want them to go completely the other way and be like, oh, we have to just make all sorts of R-rated movies now. It's like just do it right.
I would say, you know, maybe things like The Matrix, like mainstream movies with cool ideas, with reasonable budgets.
Yeah.
That, I mean, The Matrix wasn't that violent, but I believe it was rated R, wasn't it?
Yes. I know Reloaded was, because that was the previous biggest R-rated opening, but I think all three of them were R, though.
I don't really remember those movies being that violent.
Probably language. Maybe they dropped some F-bombs.
They said fuck more than once.
Probably, yeah. Didn't you uncover the movie that
it
was
Bridge of Spies.
It was Bridge of Spies, yep. Where they say it twice, and it was still PG-13.
Because I thought of that when I was watching. I'm like, oh, this must be the one Jones was talking about.
Yeah.
And it's, see, I hate that, too. It sounds completely out of place. I think we talked about it in our last podcast, but it's kind of like hearing the Wilhelm scream.
Yes.
It makes you realize you're watching a movie.
Yep.
Like, oh,
well,
here are
there's
the two,
fuck.
Here's the one instance of the word fuck. Or,
yep.
It's like seeing the scaffolding behind a stage, you know? It's like, mm-hmm. It's fake.
Yeah.
Or this is a script.
Yeah, it's like either have none or
lots.
Let it be natural, yeah.
Yeah.
None or Scarface, that's your scale to work with.
There was something, I think it was like in the late 90s, like when everything was turning into like a disaster film. I don't know if you remember this, but like swearing completely disappeared from films for a while.
Yeah,
like there was.
Wasn't
I mean,
very common.
Here's the thing: if someone sees a boulder coming at them and they're like, "Oh fuck," you know, it's funny because it's true, and that's how you would react in that situation. Or like Galaxy Quest, where she sees all the chompers, and there's this big ridiculous piston mechanism thing that Sigourney Weaver has to run through.
Okay,
and it's only there because the aliens had built it because they saw it in the show. And then she clearly said on set, oh, fuck this. But they dub it over, so she's like, oh, screw this, and it looks completely fake.
Okay.
But, again, maybe that would have given them a PG-13 instead of a PG. I think that film might have actually been PG.
That is on Netflix, so I could watch it again.
It's one of the best Star Trek movies ever made.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I just would like to see more movies. It's like,
they shouldn't be limited by like, oh, we have to get this rating. I guess that's my thing.
Well, like that Pride and Prejudice and Zombies movie that shockingly was a flop. Gee, who didn't see that coming? That was PG-13.
Yeah.
It's like, why not make it R?
I mean,
you already have a minuscule fan base.
Did they do that with that Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter? Was that R or was that PG-13?
Did they actually make that movie?
Oh, yeah. It came out like a year or two ago. It's the same writer that did both, but
yeah.
I think that one was marginally successful. But
so that is what we think about R-rated movies. Or, well, I guess we really didn't come to any conclusions.
No,
kind of was my fault. I got off topic like constantly.
That's okay. But I think the takeaway is that it's like it's cool that like Deadpool was successful and it was R-rated.
Yeah.
Like the great thing about Deadpool is they just set out and they're like, well, this movie is going to be R. Like they didn't hold back, you know, like they didn't go, oh shit, we got to try to hit this PG-13 rating.
Yeah.
They just, from the get-go, it's like, well, it's going to be R and we'll see what happens.
It's kind of like a patent. I mean, you can spend a bunch of time trying to design something to not conflict with other patents. It's a lot easier to just do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, an R-rated movie, you can do whatever you want, basically. And the creativity is not constrained by the rating.
Yes.
So granted, I mean, you had to be making the kind of movie where it can benefit from that. Like, you know, lewd jokes, lots of violence.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the movie should fit the rating.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of, like, trying to cram a Deadpool movie into PG-13, just give it the room to breathe.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean every movie has to be R, because it's clearly they don't. But if you have something
maybe
like Wolverine.
Pixar can make an R-rated movie.
Who?
Pixar can make an R-rated movie. I'd actually like to see that. See Pixar make an R-rated movie. See what they'd come up with.
Yeah.
That'd be just interesting to see. Kind of contrary to what I was driving towards, but then you think about something like that, it's like, wow, what would they do?
I don't know.
But although they're kind of going in the shitter anymore anyway, so.
Oh, because of Good Dinosaur?
Well, and they're just like the sequel house. I mean, they did pump
Inside
Out.
Inside was really, really good.
It was good. I think it's overrated personally, but it's good.
Made a lot of money, but yeah, Good Dinosaur was their biggest.
Yeah, that did
disappointment,
not do
like
well.
Ever. Like that made less money than anything.
But then they're gonna shit out another Toy Story, apparently.
Oh, another Cars.
Another Cars. They'll probably make another goddamn Monsters Inc. at some point.
They need to make Monsters LLC. That would be funny. That's what the prequel should have been called.
Ugh.
Monsters Sole Proprietor 1099. Miscellaneous. The kids would totally get that. So you want to see an R-rated Pixar film, huh?
I don't know. Just as we were talking, it's like that'd be interesting to see what they do because they've never done one before.
So our final topic is Battlefield, I guess.
And Front.
Yes, Battlefront Field. So the Battlefield series has been around for, I don't know what, 15 years since 1942?
Well, that'd be like 74 years. Was that the first one? Was the 1942?
Yeah, Battlefield 1942.
Oh, I never even played that one.
Yeah, me neither. But I did play Battlefield 2 a lot.
Yeah, I remember you and like Mike, you guys played the shit out of that game.
Well, we were even in a clan.
Nice.
You're pretty hardcore.
Oh, that's right, because didn't you have some dude who just like sat like in a tank the whole time?
Heavy, I think his name
was.
Yeah,
Heavy. Yeah, you guys would talk about him.
Well, that guy was an idiot. He would... If you were in a match, there was like one tank per side. He would take the tank and sit in it in the back of the map. It's like, have you ever like seen a war? Have you watched like Patton? That's not what you do with a tank.
George C. Scott would not stand for
this. You put the tank in front of the troops, not behind the troops, because it's a tank. God, that guy sucked. Like when I quit the clan, we were in a match and I lost. And I jumped in a tank before he could jump into it. And I drove, get this, toward the battle.
What?
With my tank. Because I figured, I guess the purpose of the tank was to fight a war.
Oh, come on.
Not to sit up on the hill. That's what he would do. He would grab the armor and then go away from the war and, like, do nothing from a distance. So the other team had a tank, active engagement with the troops. And our tank was doing nothing. And Then he was like, get out of the tank, man. Get out of the tank. He kept saying it over and over and over. And finally, I was like, oh, fuck yourself. Because it was stupid. I'm like, I'm sorry. I thought the point of this was to win. God, that guy was an annoying prick.
Oh, God. It never gets old hearing about this.
So then we all started playing Bad Company 2, which was like a disease.
Yeah, it was.
And I still play it. That's the thing. So Bad Company 2 came out like, what, oh, 6 years ago, like 6 years ago this month. Or
yeah, except I had built my new PC like a month or so before. So that sounds about right.
And it was supposed to come out like in fall of 2009, but every game moved to avoid Modern Warfare 2. So yeah, you, me, Parker, and Mike played the
piss out of that game. That's got to be the shooter I've played more than any other game by far.
It's ridiculous how much we played that game.
Oh, the Carl.
It was just so much fun. And then Battlefield 3 came out in 2011.
And it wasn't as much fun.
Yeah, we still played it a lot. I was looking at my hours. I mean, then Battlefield 4 came out, which I thought was even less fun.
Yes. Yeah.
And then Battlefront came out, which was even less fun. And then, oh, there was also Battlefield Hardline, which I bought for some reason because...
Oh, you actually got that?
It was the usual crapper. It's like, okay, Tusk bought it, Mike bought it, Parker bought it. I guess I'll buy it. It was like $40.
Yeah. Kind of like Battlefront, where it's like, well, there's enough people that have this, so...
I guess Battlefront sold pretty well, like 14 million copies. Yeah.
Shows the strength of a license.
Yeah. But it just feels like the Battlefield series has kind of lost the fun.
Yeah.
We were playing last night because, as I mentioned, I still play it. So yeah, I actually went back to playing Bad Company 2 because there's still a few servers out there, and I enjoy playing it more than 3, 4, or Battlefront. It's more fun. Isn't that the point of a game?
I think so. It's my understanding. Anyway.
So this admin was complaining. Some guy was like just blowing up all the buildings, kind of for no reason, but you know, whatever. And he's like, stop blowing up the buildings. Stop. This is your last warning. And, of course, I like blowing up buildings.
Were you on, like, the rabbit building map?
No. It was the Hill Mansion map.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
But anyway, he wasn't even bitching at me, but so I type in the chat, if I wanted to play a game with non-destructible environments, I'd play Battlefield 3, 4, or Battlefront. That's what made the game fun.
Yeah, it was great.
You could dynamically change the battlefield.
Yeah.
Even though it's just like the same four buildings rotated and color changed.
Yep, but it was great.
Yeah, but if you look at Battlefront, like you can't affect the environment in any way at all. Battlefield 3 and 4, it's
there were
mostly
things
cosmetic.
You could do, but it sucked because you'd be like, oh, okay, destructible environment. I should be able to shoot that wall. Oh, I can't shoot that wall. But I can shoot like this one.
Whereas in Bad Company 2, you can basically destroy anything.
Yeah, because there's that one map where it's like, it's got like, we call it Red Brick, and there was Rabbit Building and all this stuff. And
Africa Harbor.
Yeah, and I always remember like Rabbit Building, we called that because people would like spawn out of there. There'd always be people like pouring out of that fucking building.
Right.
And so usually we'd be running around with our Carl Gustav rocket launchers. And you'd just be sitting there, and you'd be like, you know what? There's probably somebody behind that wall. And so you just, like, lob a rocket in there. And sure enough, like, dead. You might get one or two.
If someone's, like, a sniper, which is obviously the lowest form of
the
human
filth.
Life. If they're hiding behind a wall and they're camping, destroy the wall.
Yes.
They have to move.
And it worked.
Yeah, it makes the battlefield dynamic. And that's really what they need to get back to.
Yeah, because I mean, what's the thing? Yeah, like smaller maps.
Yes.
More of like, the building destruction, like that dynamic, you know, environments essentially. And because, that freaking map, you could like destroy everything in that map. I know there were some matches where every building was leveled by the time it was over.
And it was awesome.
And it was great.
Yeah, so if people keep spawning in a building and the building looks like it's about to fall, it's like, try to destroy the building and bring it down on them. It was just more fun.
Yeah, if you did that, you'd get like 3 kills, 4 kills sometimes. It'd be like, yes, you know, it was just awesome.
And the thing that so when you got to Battlefield 3, Battlefield 3 was very console-y because, you know, it came out at the end of the generation and it was kind of held back. It's like, oh, this game should be a lot bigger than it is. We still played it a lot. That one basically had nothing destructible. It felt backwards.
I thought it had a little bit, like, couldn't you, like, wasn't there some, like, big tower that you could be in and that whole thing could get taken down if you were up on the top of it? I seem to remember that happening.
No,
I don't know if that was 3 or 4.
That fell down as a scripted event.
Oh.
You're talking about, what was it, Caspian Border?
I don't know. There was, like, this city map, and you could be, like, way up in this
That's
tower.
Battlefield 4.
That was in 4, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's that's a big building, and if you destroy... But again, it's... So if you go down there and if you destroy the six columns, the building will fall down.
Yeah.
But it's like, why would you do that strategically? It doesn't feel organic.
Yeah.
Whereas blowing out walls to find snipers, that feels organic.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the battle instead of like, I'm going to go out of my way to try to knock down this building. Or like in the one map with the big ship that would crash into the, into the island.
Yeah.
So the way you make that happen is, again, why would you do this? That ship is like stuck on like a wind turbine in the ocean.
Okay.
If you shoot the wind turbine with like 10 rockets, it'll break. And the ship comes loose and that's what causes it to crash.
Okay.
But it's just a binary thing. It either does it or it doesn't.
Yeah.
And you have to do a bunch of repetitive nonsense to make it happen.
Oh.
But it doesn't feel
which
organic.
Which you would never do, so.
And the maps are too big. You know, you spawn, you run for 40 seconds, and then you die.
Yeah, it's like you pray you get in a piece of armor. If you don't get some armor, then yeah, you're running forever, and then yeah, you get killed by somebody that's in armor. That was my biggest complaint with like 3 and 4.
It got really
bad.
There's
just too much goddamn armor, and it's like...
It almost felt like there wasn't enough in part 3. It was overpowered, but there wasn't a lot of it. So in part 4, there's like, okay, here's more tanks per round, so...
Yeah.
Well, the thing that sucked about that and why I didn't think the balance was very good, whereas Titanfall, I thought the balance was really good. If you're an engineer, you get, like, what, 3 anti-tank rockets? And 3 anti-tank rockets hit in just the right spot, I think will destroy a tank.
Okay.
If you miss once, you don't destroy the tank. If the tank has an engineer, you don't destroy the tank. So the only way to destroy a tank, really, is to have an engineer with a support guy giving him more bullets.
Okay.
Because you aren't given enough shots to destroy a tank.
Yeah.
Unless you get resupplied. But in Battlefield 3 and 4, they changed it so Assault doesn't give out bullets like it did in Bad Company.
Yes.
Support does. I kind of hope they change that in whatever game is next. Just basically do Bad Company 2, because it was perfect.
Yeah, it was just phenomenal. It's like...
Like, that's the thing, you run out of ammo in 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to play support.
Yep.
I mean, if you really, I guess if you have to have the stupid support class, make them like a medic as well.
Mm-hmm. That's how it should be.
Because otherwise, they don't have anything special to do. All they do is they throw bullets.
Yeah.
If a medic could revive you and throw bullets. But that's why it's so fun in Bad Company 2. It's like... Not only do you have these grenades and missiles and things to blow everything up, but you can also give yourself ammo.
Yes. I always remember that in the game, too. Like, the snipers have that stupid, like, beacon thing they can drop.
Oh, yeah.
And so you'd always know that there was, like, some douchebag sniper around.
Beep, beep. What do we call it? The heartbeat of a pussy?
Yep.
There must be a sniper hiding around here.
Yeah, then we call the snipers filth, because they're like the lowest form of humanity.
Yep, they're covered with like the ghillie suits, so they kind of look like clumps of shit stuck on the ground.
Yeah, that's right.
Snipers.
That's right, heartbeat of a pussy. I forgot about that.
Beep, 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 beep. Oh, there's a sniper hiding somewhere, and they would never move. That's why it was fun.
Yes.
Because a sniper, given the chance, will never move.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why if you can blow up their building or blow up the wall, it's like, oh, look, you have to move now, loser. Oh, that was so fun. It still is fun.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I remember fucking Mike, like, sometimes he'd, like, pop in as a sniper, and he'd be like, okay, guys, I'm going to be filth for a while.
Oh, remember when he was the first one to get to level 50?
Yep.
He was like, oh, I'm going to change my name to Deity God.
Well, wasn't that...
He logs off, and then his Deity God guy comes back in.
Yeah, he's Deity like, God is logged into server. And then he comes in and he's like, oh, all my guns are shit. Fuck this.
Yeah, because he had to start over. That's so funny. Deity God has connected.
And the backstory to that wasn't there one night where like he was like drunk or something playing, and
that's
then
every night.
But he like went into some building and there were like 3 or 4 people in it, and somehow he killed them all and got out of there alive, and he's just like, I'm a fucking god. And then somewhere along the way, like, he said he was a deity, and then we're like, oh, are you a deity god?
Yep. And that's so, where the name Deity God came from.
Yep. And so then when he hit 50, we were like, oh, Mike, you've got to, like, make a character called Deity God. And he's like, okay, I'll do that.
But yeah, then you had to start over with your guns.
Oh, God, it was so fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. The other games just weren't as fun. I don't know.
They're just kind of like soulless, you know?
On Battlefield 4, do you remember that map? What was it, like Operation Locker in the prison?
Yes.
That's really popular because there's no armor. It's just shooting. Yeah.
Basically, Battlefield, get rid of your goddamn armor.
If you look back in Battlefield 2, the player v player gun mechanics were pretty poor. We used to say that the most accurate gun in the game was the bumper, running people over with the Jeep. But their gun mechanics have gotten really good and solid. So I know maybe they're trying to differentiate themselves from Call of Duty by having the armor, but it's just not as much fun. Because it's no fun because if you're on foot, it's like you have to fight tanks, which you basically can't compete with, which is realistic, but it's not fun. Then snipers are shooting you. Now, if you compare that to Titanfall, did you play Titanfall?
No, I never played that.
So Titanfall had the mechs. Mm-hmm. First of all, you had to earn the mechs. They were like a kill streak.
Okay.
Like if, you know, the faster you kill people, the better you do and assist points, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Then like, okay, we got your Titan ready, and then you get it. Now, the Titans were fun to pilot and whatnot, but they weren't invincible.
Okay.
And here's the key thing. The on-foot players, they called pilots, they had unlimited anti-tank rounds.
Ah, nice.
there was basically no resupply. I think you could run out of, like, bullets for your main gun, but it was pretty much never happened.
So it helped, like, balance the game really well.
So your ability to defeat a Titan wasn't based off how much ammo you had or if you were near a resupply person. It was based off your skill.
If you could hit it or not.
Yep. Yep. So if you were nimble enough and, you know, could do the double jumps, the rocket jumps, and the wall climbs, you are far more nimble than a Titan, and you can actually defeat it. Hmm. You're not limited by how much ammo you have. You're limited by your skill.
Yeah.
And that made it a lot more balanced and a lot more fun. Hmm. Whereas in Battlefield, it's like, oh, my three rockets, I didn't kill it. I'm dead.
Yeah, like in those games, it's like basically, if you run out of your ammo, you're just like, you know, I probably should just like walk out here and just let them kill me so I can like start over.
Yeah, that was the thing I noticed. it relies on teamwork. So someone has to be a support guy to give people ammo. But if people aren't playing as a team or there's randoms on the server, they can't really coordinate that.
Yeah.
And even if they do, who wants to be a support guy?
Yeah.
Because you've got that. All the support guns are like these stupid heavy machine guns that aren't really fun to play with.
Yeah.
But at least when the medic had that, you know, the medics could move faster. They could do something. They could heal people.
Yeah, because I liked playing medic in Bad Company 2.
Like a pair of really good medics resin each other can really tear up a server.
Because that's just kind of the, like in MMOs, I play healer and stuff in that. Like, I kind of like that sort of role, but it's like, yeah, you have to have some sort of versatility as well. So
I don't like how they put the medic function onto assault.
Yeah.
Because if anything seems like a support role, it's a medic.
Yes, yeah, very much so. But, yeah, I don't know. Basically, they need to make Bad Company 3. That's really the answer.
So Parker said IGN announced that Battlefield 5 might be in World War 1.
Yeah, I saw that last night when I was looking at Twitter, and like Cliff Bleszinski had said something about it, and he's like, "Oh, I bet you Call of Duty goes back to World War 2." And I was just like, "Good, they should." It's like I'm tired of this modern warfare bullshit.
So here's the thing. I think of it like a sitcom. Once every character on a sitcom has dated each other, it's time for the sitcom to end.
Yes.
Just like these modern future war games. Once every country on Earth has gone to war with each other in a fictional manner, it's time for the series to change.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you have things like South America invading America, and it's like, come on.
That's what's going on in the new Call of Duty.
I think that might have been in Ghost. It's like South America nukes America. I'm sorry, nukes United States of America, you know what I mean.
Well, didn't they have, like, people with machine guns in space and Ghosts?
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you take a machine gun to space? I mean, you might have to shoot, like, asteroids or Sandra Bullock or something.
But
machine guns in space. Every pound that we send to space costs $1 million. Here's a machine gun and the ammo to go with it. We're going to spend $40 million... to send this $1,000 machine gun to space in case you need to shoot people while you're up there.
But yeah, it's like when I read that, I was like immediately intrigued. Like Battlefield 5, I wouldn't care about it otherwise. But when I heard it's like, oh, they might go back to like World War One, I'm like, that could be interesting.
Yeah, like a real war that actually happened.
Yeah.
I would love it if Call of Duty went back to World War II.
Oh, I'd love it. I'd go and buy the next one right now.
Honestly, I don't know. How fun would World War One be, though?
That's kind of my concern. Like, it's kind of sad that you put it in those terms. Like, which would be the most fun war? But it's just like, you know, we're not as familiar with, like, the history, and it's all trench warfare and stuff, and...
Well, I mean, it's all about the weapons. So there were very few machine guns used in World War One. I mean, it was the first. I mean, obviously they had machine guns.
Yeah,
Your average person didn't have one. Of course, in World War II, your average soldier didn't have a machine gun either. An American would have had the M1 Garand, which is a semi-automatic, only has 8 shots. You know, the one that goes ba-ding, and the clip comes out.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, Tommy guns or Thompsons were not standard issue. Like an officer might have one.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Germans, their standard gun was the Kar 98, which is like a 5-shot bolt-action rifle. And then the Russian one was just as lame. It was the Mazda Nagant, which was like a 6-shot bolt-action clipper strip-fed rifle.
Wow.
So I guess my point is most people had quote-unquote lame guns in the real World War II.
Yes, yeah.
Because like when we played those games, like, you know, everyone wants like, you know, the... SCG-44, the Thompson, or the BAR.
But yeah, World at War, I really liked World at War. Like, that was the last Call of Duty that was not modern, I believe.
Yes.
And that was quite some time ago now.
Yeah, that was like 2006, wasn't it? Or 2000... Oh, wait, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare came out in 2007. World at War came out in 2008.
That's right. They did have it come
in
between.
And Call of Duty 3 was the one that wasn't done by Infinity Ward. I think it was done by Spark or something.
Treyarch, I think.
Possibly. And that was in 2005? No, 2006.
Well, Call of Duty 2... I'm so confused. I remember they brought that out on the Xbox 360 when it came out, Call of Duty 2.
Yes, because it was a new game at that time.
Yeah, and then 3 was the following year, I believe.
And then it was Call of Duty 4... Then they stopped numbering them when they did World at War, which is 2008, which is the first one to have the Nazi zombies.
Yes, that's right.
Then Modern Warfare 2 came out in 2009.
But yeah, I just remember like World at War was like really great because you had like the great maps, like the out in the Pacific Islands, they had some of that in there, and then you had the German stuff too or whatever. But I remember that was like call in the dogs, like when you had the kill streak, you could have like these attack dogs, like German shepherds come in or whatever. And, like, you'd hear that, and you'd be like, oh, shit, here come the damn dogs. And you'd be on the lookout for it, And
yeah,
but
I thought that game was a lot of fun.
But it's like, those games had color, too, to them. It seems like all the modern shit, it's always, like, this bleak, like, brown, dirty, downtrodden shit or whatever, It's like...
Yeah, war should be colorful.
Yeah.
Well, what else I miss?
It's just like in World of Warcraft, like you go to zones and that there's zones where they're just like brown and whatever. They're kind of like, then you go to like a nice colorful zone. It's just like pleasing to spend time, in that environment.
I also miss games where you single-handedly save the world.
Yeah.
Like Medal of Honor is a good example because we have this disc lane here from 1999.
From the PlayStation.
Yep. And then the follow-up, Medal of Honor Allied Assault, which was Infinity Ward before they were called Infinity Ward. And you weren't fighting in a squad, Tango, Whiskey, Charlie, Oscar, Mike, clicks to the next objective. You were just by yourself, but you'd have a mission like, go into this village and you can't make any noise. You have to use a silenced pistol and talk to like this resistance person.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like squads going everywhere and blowing up everything. There was actually like some, clandestine operations going on. And it was fun because it changed up the gameplay, and it made you feel like you were doing something like, ooh, I'm like this cool badass.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
If you did get in trouble, it's like, oh, I've got to run and hide. I have to
survive. You got to fight your way out of it somehow.
Yeah, there aren't like 4 teammates that don't do anything in the fight and also can't be killed.
Yes.
Like, you felt like you were in control of everything because you weren't seeing scripted AI companions right alongside you the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of missed that too. So go back to World War II. And then just save the world single-handedly.
Yep.
Destructible environments. What else?
Well, and even like, and that was the thing. Even like Bad Company 2, you know, they did the Nom expansion, and that, like, that was pretty cool. Like when they did that, you know, it was just like an expansion with a few maps and stuff. But still, you know, it's just, it's like, yeah, don't be so beholden to like this modern or like future warfare shit. Because I don't know, to me that stuff's just boring. I know that may not be the popular thing, but it's,
if you look at Call of Duty 4 when that came out. You know, we were so sick of World War II games. It was, yes, it was a breath of fresh air. It's like, oh, wow, it's modern Iraq or Afghanistan. This is kind of edgy. And yep, then I think there's easily been more modern or future warfare games now than there ever were World War II games. Oh, yeah, look at the quote in the back of the box. Fight World War II for the first time on Medal of Honor.
Oh, those were innocent days.
Only game that lets you fight the Nazis. That's what it says. It says that right there.
It does. Oh, those were the days of wine and roses.
Of the spear.
Yep. Oh, God.
So yeah, make the games balanced. Enough of this smaller future maps. War crap. Yeah. But World War One? Does that mean you're going to be on horses?
That could be interesting, I guess.
Horses are like really crappy tanks.
Yep.
Oh, what about the single-player stuff in Battlefield? I did play through Battlefield 4's campaign.
I think I played through a chunk. Was that the one, though, where it wasn't really a campaign? It was just kind of like these.
That was 3.
That was 3, okay.
Yeah, I got like 2 stages into that, and I'm like, this is utterly boring.
Yeah, I might have done half of that. I don't think I played the 4 campaign all the way through.
It's decent. But again, and going back to the, you know, the cost of games thing, like nobody buys those games for the campaign. Like,
yeah.
They have to know that, you know, people don't even touch that aspect of it.
Well, it's like we always gave Mike shit for that.
He's not the only one.
Yeah, I know. He was just the one we had, so we gave him shit for it.
Yeah, never played the campaign. Didn't even touch it.
Didn't even know it existed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Battlefield 2, there was no campaign, and no one cared. Yep. But then if you look at Bad Company 2, the campaign was really good.
Yeah.
It's like, what happened? Did all those writers leave? Maybe they did.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, it's like nobody gives a shit about that. It's like, you know, Battlefront, they basically realized that with that. There are some little single-player things you can do, but it's not like a campaign or anything. It's more kind of like training you on how to play the game.
I saw that. I was watching the Angry Joe show, who's one of the, like, you know, 30-year-old YouTube gamer people. I think he was talking about Halo, and he was bitching about how Halo no longer had split-screen local co-op.
Yes, that was a big complaint about the new one.
Here's the thing. Does anyone do that anymore? I mean,
I don't know.
If you're, like, 30 years old, I mean, you haven't realized what happens as you go in your 30s, and all your friends get scattered to the wind.
Yep.
It's not like being in college and playing GoldenEye. It's completely changed.
Yeah, I would think it would be a pretty small percentage that would utilize that. You know, maybe if it's like kids that are still at home, you know, if there's like a few siblings that want to play the game together, you know, it'd be useful for them. But it's like, you know, by and large, it's going to be pretty lightly used.
Well, yeah, and the graphics and performance is going to take a hit when you start doing that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just seems, again, just like a cartridge, that was a product of a bygone era. It's like you didn't have the internet, so to play multiplayer, you had to cut one screen into 4 screens.
Yep.
And now you just have 4 screens.
Yeah.
It's kind of been made obsolete. And then, yeah, again, and if a minority of people are going to use a feature, don't put in the feature.
Mm-hmm.
It's just logic, I guess.
Yep. Because they're going to buy it anyway. So,
well, looks like we managed to go longer than we thought we would again.
What a shock.
You were right. We definitely had things to say.
Yes. Well, and we found a third topic in there.
Well, that's all the time we have for this podcast. We'll try to do another one of these in a month. We'll see you next time.
Adios.